You're listening to South Florida's Good News Station, WCNO Palm City.
This is God's plan for redemption, and it's good news.
Today's broadcast is supported by Plains Dental Arts in Vero Beach and Port St. Lucie. Thanks to Dr. Alex Plain at Plains Dental Arts for keeping New Day with Red Palmer on the air daily at WCNO 89.9 FM.
And good day. It's Rhett Palmer. How are you? Another beautiful day in paradise. Lyle Freed is our guest. Am I saying it right?
You got it right.
Lyle Freed. Looks like fried.
It does. Freed. I'll answer to either, but it's Freed.
And he who the sun has set freed is freed indeed. Lyle Freed is a man who knows about recovery. And actually, I believe you head up a church, a recovery church. Is it in Fort Pierce, Florida, or Port St. Lucie?
Yeah, Port St. Lucie. It's a recovery church of the Treasure Coast in Port St. Lucie.
How interesting to have a recovery church. But I presume it also accepts people that are not in recovery on Sundays.
We actually meet Monday evenings now, and we do accept people not in recovery. And the idea of recovery is not just substances. Recovery is a life thing. Most people are recovering from something, whether they realize it or not. It could be relationship issues. It could be, food addictions. Nowadays, internet is an addiction. Social media, porn. There's all kinds of things that people need to recover from.
Isn't that wild? Who would ever think? And it's changed our lives. I don't know how it's changed your life, Lyle, but it's like I wonder, what did I do before social media?
Right.
I was on at 6 a.m. this morning. I was doing some artwork. Where was I doing it? On my little iPhone screen or my iPad. In this case, it was my iPhone. Then I just woke up again. I was doing some more work on a painting and then had to do my research about you and our other guests today. And it was done on my iPhone. And so, having to have the wife say, could you not bring the phone to the table at dinner time? People are quite rude, and young people are on their iPhones. But anyway, so recovery, everybody needs recovery. I can just see T-shirts now with a big finger that goes, you need recovery. How did you get involved in all of this?
Oh, gosh. Well, it started from my own need. Back in the 90s, the reality of my need for recovery became very, very real as my life began to dissolve in front of me. Just one thing after another, all the signs were there. I lost pretty much everything and still clung to the things that were killing me and finally broke down and went to a treatment center. Which, quite frankly, didn't help a whole lot. And I ended up devolving even further until finally I went into a place that allowed me to do things a different way and look at life a different way and finally found the path. And quite frankly, when I was there, I just thought, that's pretty cool. This helping people for a living, it sounds like a great thing. So when I was there, I went back to school, went to seminary, got a psychology degree, a few other things, and just to been working in the field ever since.
Wow. You really got dedicated to be on the give. Well, they say by giving to others, we save ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're naturally a child. I'm interested to know, you said you went to a recovery center or whatever it was, a place to dry up, but it didn't work. And why didn't it work? And then what did end up working?
Well, the first place I went to was supposed to be the quote unquote best in the world. And it was very expensive. This is in the late 90s and it was 30, 40 grand a month, depending on how much of it you partook of. And at the end of my 28 days, they told me that I was a pretty severe case and I really needed about 3 months. And I couldn't argue with them. I said, well, okay. And of course, then they wanted another chunk of money. And I just felt like, sorry, I can't give you what I don't have. Quite frankly, they were lucky to get the first bunch. So they said, let's think about it. And it was a New Year's weekend, actually. So it was a long weekend. And I think it was Monday or Tuesday, whenever business was back in, they came to me and said, wow, you graduated. It was a miracle. As soon as I ran out of money, I was well. So it turned out I wasn't. I went into a what they called three-quarter way house, and everybody in there was using. As I was moving in, there was someone being carted out by EMS from an overdose, so it wasn't a real good environment. And I lasted, I think, 3 or 4 months at that route, and I was going to, like most addicts, I thought more was better. So when they told me I needed to make 90 meetings in 90 days, I went to 3 a day saying, hey, I can do that in 30 days. So I did all the things they told me to do, but something just wasn't clicking, and I went back out and did a little run before I found a place. It was actually a homeless shelter for men with addictions down in Homestead, Florida. They weren't actually in Homestead yet, but it was faith-based, and it allowed me to dive into my faith. And that really was the turning point for me, was being able to just steep myself in the scriptures and my relationship with the Lord. And that really was a life changer, a life saver.
Did you not believe in Jesus prior to this?
I did. I actually came to know Christ at a young age. I came from a atheistic family, but at 11 years old, I was sneaking off to go to church. You know, I wasn't supposed to be going to church, so I told him I was going to go see my girlfriend, who I had made up didn't really exist. And I'd ride my bike over on Sundays and Wednesdays. I'd hit a church about 8 miles from home. And
Wait. This is amazing. You actually lied to your parents, yeah, telling them you're going out with a girl, but you're really going to church.
Yeah,
That's quite inverted from the normal story.
Isn't it? I reflect back on it. I was like, it's okay to go see this girl that didn't exist, but church would not have been as well accepted. Yeah.
Wow. What a twist that is. And what gave you this desire to seek out a relationship with a higher power?
You know, I can't really tell you where it first hit me, but from a very young age, I felt a draw and a pull. You know, I remember hearing the name of Jesus, and it had to be in first or second grade. I actually remember the first time that I heard about Jesus. Our family was in Bimini, and my father was doing some work down there, and they had an Easter egg hunt. And prior to the Easter egg hunt, there was a sermon. Now, we went to collect the candy, basically. But the pastor talked about, and it wasn't really so much, it was kind of a strange Easter sermon, looking back on it. He's talking about the selection of Gideon's army. And I remember thinking, I wanted to be a part of God's army. I wanted to work on the side of God. And so much to the point that when I got back home and to kindergarten, I would stand in line at the water fountain. I would cup the water because I thought that's what was going to make me. Obviously, I missed a good part of the message, but that's what I thought was going to get me in. Yeah.
No, but that's cool. That's cool. I used to make baked beans on Friday nights and put them in a pie tin and sit there with a spoon of my baked beans and a piece of bread and butter, and I'd wait till a rawhide till they went to the chuck wagon, and then I'd eat with the cowboys. So you wanted. That's amazing. You heard the story of Gideon and went to the water fountain, because in case people don't know, maybe you could give the short version of the story of Gideon. It's quite extraordinary.
Sure. God was paring down Gideon's army to show that it was his strength and not man's, essentially, that would give the victory. And part of that was how the soldiers drank from the stream, if they lapped the water versus cupped the water. And it was God's way of eliminating some of the soldiers, so to speak. And the ones that cupped it were the ones that were chosen to be in the army and fight for God's purposes. And so that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to fight for God's purposes. And as time went on, I saw other people. I would hear people talk. And I remember a good friend who lived down the street. His mother would quote scriptures on a regular basis, and always just fascinating me, caught my ear. And to this day, I still remember some of the scriptures that she quoted when I was just a little kid.
Like which ones?
From Matthew, she was discussing, you know, the mind, and she was talking about how just even lusting after a woman is the same as committing adultery. And I remember as a young kid, not even understanding what adultery was, but catching the gist that what runs in my mind has a lot to do with what's in my heart, and a good heart will change a good mind.
You know, it's funny you say that, because obviously if people get dissuaded and they don't really want to talk about Christ, it's very important. He says, he who denies me before man, I'll deny one day before my Father. He who declares me before man, I will one day declare before my Father. And we are all called to the ministry of reconciliation. And look at this lady brought up Jesus. All these people are speaking it. Mm-hmm. You go to this event and you hear this man speaking. You're collecting all this. I mean, Bob Dylan got saved and became a Christian. I wasn't a Christian, but I still didn't become a Christian. My friend Bobby Vendetta, a well-known bass player, he became a Christian. Then for a year, I watched out of the corner of my eye. He had changed. Something about him had changed. And it took all these people hitting me for years. Finally, I relented at the age of 29, called upon the Lord in my living room, and surrendered my life and was filled with the holiness of God and sat down in my rocking chair going, wow, this is real. And I immediately said, this is why people do drugs, because they're seeking the that's the counterfeit, and a connection with the Lord is the non-counterfeit.
Absolutely.
The only disappointment is for the first 6 months, he was with me very strong. But later on in life, obviously, when my mom died and a long 20-year relationship ended, I found solace in a bottle of Glenlivet scotch and started drinking it every night, living alone. And I got inebriated until I had a new lady in my life. And she said, you're an alcoholic. What I want to know is, have you ever had the experience where the Lord's presence was really within your bosom, your whole body?
Oh, yes. It's one of the sweetest things ever. I know not to rely on feelings, but there is no greater feeling than the presence of the Lord. It really is just so. I talk about it as a matter of peace. You know, he talks about all the things that the Lord offers us. And I would say that peace that passes understanding. You know, a lot of people who use drugs think they're looking to be happy or think they're looking to feel a certain way. And I think what we're all really seeking is the peace of God and that peace that he brings, that overwhelming sense of his presence. You cannot have any other desire in the midst of that. You know, there's nothing that's going to supplant that.
Let me ask you this. Yeah. But why? Some might say drunk in the spirit for the first 6 months, and then there'd be then the kind of fade away and then come back and fade away for years and years, come back, but enough that I knew was there. I would say now it's very, very rare when I feel his presence. No wonder I went to alcohol. So of course this is me trying to blame Jesus for me going after. I don't know what he'll have to say about that.
Yeah, and I've had this conversation numerous times with folks in the recovery community, and I liken it to this. You know, when I first met my wife, the giddiness, if you will, that I felt, I could not have survived if I...
Tune in again tomorrow at 3 a.m., 7 a.m., or 3 p.m. for the continuation of this interview. I'm your host, Rhett Palmer. And this is a new day.
Praise him, all you shining stars. Praise the